Sorry, there's an echo in here.
I didn't even know what that was. It scared me. Scared me bad. Real bad. I knew that something was out there, but I didn't know what it was. That's what I called George.
George?
George was the one who always knew everything about anybody who was in the underbelly of the city. I said, George, did you hear that sound, George? George was like, I didn't hear anything. And you know why? Because I was asleep. I knew that George wasn't asleep because he never slept between 8 and 9. Why would he lie? Hello and welcome to another episode of Sounds from the 70s with Gary and Rob, sometimes known as Turd McGee. Coming, I don't know where I came.
Like that.
I have no idea where I came up with that one.
Turd McGee.
Coming to you from our spacious studio somewhere in Fuckville, North America, because that's what it feels like. Fuckville, North America.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... We're not in the city where we live. We're outside of the city, but we're not in the country. Think about it. And if you, I think I said this last show, you know, riddle me this, you know, because it's a conundrum. But it's not like the show where we did it in a shack, right?
Well, that was cool because you didn't know what went on in that shack. Huh. You could guess. Please continue.
No, I was just hearing some static from my laptop.
Oh yeah, it's just making a hissing noise.
It's just making a hissing noise.
That means it's going to explode.
Yeah, whatever. Today, whatever. Whatever you say, just fuck off.
I'm trying to do something here.
Today, we will be reviewing another debut album released 50 years ago in 1973, and that is the debut album by singer-songwriter Elliot Murphy, the ever-popular Elliot Murphy, and his record Aqua Show. You had a solo album called Land Show, didn't you?
No, it was Sky Show, but it fell through.
Get it? Get it, people? That's his joke for the day.
That's what I'm done. I'm spent.
Why don't you lay down and rest for a while?
I'll go halfway. I'll recline.
Now, before we start all of this fun and frivolity.
Oh, frivolity.
I love using that word. If I can use it in every show, which I try, I feel we've succeeded no matter what we've done in that show. If I can do frivolity in it, then I know it's a success, sir.
I'll be listening for it again.
Well, it won't happen again today.
In future shows.
Well, maybe I won't do it again. Just because you said that. we're going to dispense right now with the fun and frivolity. I just want to say that I did an interview this past week promoting the show.
Ooh.
Where I called Rob extremely mentally handicapped. Now, I want to apologize to Rob and everybody listening to our show every week out there for that remark. I meant to say that Rob was just simply mentally handicapped. And that was a bad choice of words to say he was extremely mentally handicapped. I meant he was normally mentally handicapped.
A lot of people got the wrong impression.
Yeah, they thought that you were like, you couldn't feed yourself. And
yeah,
stuff like
there,
that,
there
you
know? Were people wheeling me around.
Yeah, that'd be cool though. Anyways,
only when drunk.
it was a bad choice of words, and I want to apologize for that. Also, in the interview, I said that Rob was the only reason we didn't have more listeners than we already do. When I should have said that he was the main reason, and not the only reason that we don't get more listeners. I feel really bad about that comment. Yes, he's a big part of why we don't get more listeners. Huge part.
I repel listeners.
You,
I repel them.
Repel them in a way that is sickening. It is sickening.
You know, here you're doing a nice show and you're talking to people listening and enjoying.
And they're loving me, and all of a sudden you say something.
And I chirp in and everything goes dead quiet.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, there are other things like Uptown Mike was a very bad producer.
Yeah, but he contributes now by not showing up.
Yes.
That's his biggest contribution.
So actually, by him not showing up, he does more for the show than you do.
His absence is huge.
And one more thing. I know it sounds like I was attacking Rob in this interview. I was not.
Did it?
It was all just bad words, like bad wording. I did call him a third-rate William B. William when I meant a second-rate William
rate.
B. William. And I hope I can be forgiven for those remarks. They were ill-advised. And I admit, not well thought out.
William B. William.
What'd you say?
William B. William.
William B. William. I feel bad because I can't even imagine what a third rate William B. William would be.
No, unrecognizable as a William B. William. That's what I think. So yeah, far removed.
The second rate William B. William just fits you perfectly. It's like, you know, it's just.
You've got maybe two character traits of William B. William.
So, speaking of ill-advised remarks, Rob, how was your week?
My week was the sort of week that had 7 days in it, although I wouldn't know because they kind of came and went without any acknowledgement, anything to mark the time. But years go by like that, so it wasn't unusual, I guess. Perhaps the week was a little more purple than I usually.
Odds and ends. Lost time is not found again. Now, today on Odds and Ends, I was supposed to have two things to talk about. But on the way here, I forgot the other one.
It'll come to you.
I don't think so.
I got three.
But this is a good one because this is the only one I have in the script because I didn't think of the other one till today.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to just tell a little story.
About?
Very strange story from my youth that concerns. I remembered it because, well, I've always remembered this from when I was going to school. And we just lost in the last couple of weeks. Not lost, he died. It's not like he's roaming around in a woods or something. Roger Whittaker, the great beloved singer Roger Whittaker, has passed away at I don't know exactly. I'm going to say 92.
Yeah, he must have been really old.
He was,
because he was old in the 70s when I was old. You got to find out.
How many years on earth, Roger? I'm going to check that because he might have been 89 actually, but I'm going to check that right now. So while I check that, Rob is going to tell me about what Roger Whittaker means to him in his life.
Roger Whittaker, I know best because he left old Durham town and he never went back. He said, the hell with this. He made his last farewell.
That's very good, actually, to put those two songs in a sentence, which... see, they're making me...
Yes, he did leave old Durham town.
See, they're making me do calculations, and I'm not a... Just say what it is.
Give me a year of birth.
Shut up. They give me a year and birth and death, and then they're trying to make me calculate that out when they could just say...
He lived for this long.
I think it's 87. Let me see here. It is 87 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. My mom is 6 years older than him.
And Roger?
Yeah. Okay, the story I have.
Let's do the story.
It's kind of weird. And I tried, I remember I heard or I saw on the internet the day or the day after that Roger Whittaker died. And I immediately called my friend Karen, who I've known since I was 5 years old, and that we've gone from kindergarten all the way up and finished school together. And I told her, do you remember... Roger Whittaker just died. And I said, do you remember? You remember when, you know, we used to have to listen to Roger Whittaker in school? She goes, I have no idea what you're talking about. This is an image that and that is implanted in my head that I can never get rid of. And I can't imagine. It must have been so terrifying for some people like Karen that they blocked it out from their memory, because I can't believe you would forget something like that. Now, there are some things that I don't, that are kind of like the reason why, but we would come into, I think it was about grade 4 or 5, and we would go into the class, and the teacher, who I'm not going to name, was very Roger Whittaker obsessed.
So a little L7 for the times.
So we went to a Catholic school, so we would say the prayer early, you know, the first thing in the morning. And then sometimes he would just say, like, put your heads down on what do you call them? Desks?
Desks.
We'll and then he would play Get Out or Sir Roger Whittaker. Is this a true story?
Play some Pink Floyd?
And he would, this was not a time to be cool. This was 1974, 75.
They were trying to prevent you from being cool.
Yeah, they were trying to un-Pink Floyd you.
Oh.
And so, he would play at times, or when there was time left over, if everybody finished like their test and there was still like 10 minutes left in the class, they all handed it in, then it was like, put your heads on the table, time to listen to Roger Whittaker. And so now all I think about for the last 50 years is the emotional turmoil that this man did to us.
Psychopath.
Making
call
us
him what he is.
Listening to Roger Whittaker. Now, I'm not saying that's a terrible thing. All I'm saying is that I don't understand why there was no explanation. And it was just like, I love Roger Whittaker, so you guys are going to have to listen to this. And it'll calm you down and think of the... I remember he played The Last Farewell and he said, think about the ships. And I'm like, oh, okay. And this happened on a kind of a semi-regular basis, maybe once every week or 2 weeks. I have no idea. All I just remember is it happening. I can't believe that Karen doesn't remember any of this. I could ask Tom if he was around, but unfortunately Tom has been passed for like 8 years now, so I can't ask him. But I'm telling you, it's weird because you shouldn't bring any music, I think, unless you're teaching it, and just make people listen to it, because it taints your view of that whatever artist you're bringing
in.
Yeah,
that's not cool.
And that's not cool. And there were some cool things I remember. Like, I remember in grade 10, I forgot his name in grade 10.
That teacher.
English teacher.
Started with an M.
Yes.
Maricelli. It was an Italian name.
Yes. We'll leave it at that. But we know the teacher. He actually, in a good way, in a teaching way, not just in a relaxing, listen to Roger Whittaker and your life will change, because that's weird. I mean, seriously, that's weird. But I remember he played us, We Speak of Lee J. Cobb. And I think that I've remembered and always thought of Lee J. Cobb is because in grade 10 or grade 11, our English teacher in high school played us Death of a Salesman on the record. And the same thing, I think we had to put, even at grade 10 or whatever, we had to put our heads on the table and listen to it. And it's a long record. I remember it was not just one day. I remember it was a couple of days. And he'd play a part of it. He'd play like act one and then he'd play act two. And it was very exciting.
Did anyone fall asleep?
I don't know, because I was excited. It was actually exciting because I had never heard the story of Death of the... We were only like, what? Grade 10, like 15, whatever.
Yeah.
And so to hear this, and Lee J. Cobb is very... he was Willie Loman, and he was like, you guys don't understand me. That's my Lee J. Cobb. Not very good. I do my Lee J. Cobb... on the waterfront, Lee J. Cobb, which is, if I can remember it, you guys don't understand, They're getting ready to dust off the hot seat for me. He was a very emotional actor.
I'll take your word for it.
Lovely Jacob. Anyways, very enrapturing. And I listened to this and it was very educational. And he did another one. He did a couple of things. And one of them was he was big on, well, it's something he had to teach. So he brought in a record of I Am a Rock by Simon and Garfunkel. And then you would listen to the song. I played it a couple times. He wouldn't just play it once. He played it. And then he said, you figure out what does that mean? And of course, smart asses like me would say, he's a rock. When of course it means like he's on his own. He wants to be on his own. He doesn't want people around. He's a solitary figure. All so this metaphorical
he's,
stuff.
He's not a rock.
He's not actually a rock, but he wants to be on his own. Anyways, that's the way you use music and stuff. You don't just throw it at people. And Roger Whittaker, God bless him, but that I've been tainted for the last 50 years because of that. And I swear to God, I think Karen blocked that out because it was so weird.
You know, that's one possible explanation. Another is she didn't even register it as a memory.
Yes,
that's when another thing. It came to Roger Whittaker time, head down the desk, thinking of something entirely else. Music didn't even penetrate.
Think of the boys or something. Right off.
Yep.
And I bet you there was a lot of people who did that. Like, I'm just ignoring this and just relaxing before we have to go to our next class.
It bugged you.
It did. I think I was very mature. I have to admit, I'm the guy that was listening seriously to music by the time I was not even 12 years old. I was 11. So I was a really mature kid. So I thought about things way too much. And I think that was the problem, is that I was thinking, does anybody else think this is weird? I mean, really. So that's my Roger Whittaker story. It's kind of bringing back some kind of unpleasant memories.
But the memories.
But Roger had nothing to do with it.
No, I think of Roger. I think of, those two songs.
The Who song?
Those Who songs. Roger Whittaker was a big Who fan.
He
did all of Tommy.
you remember most fondly when he did his Who tribute album.
Yeah.
Who the fuck are you? Fuck. Okay, Rob.
And Roger Whittaker, he was versatile.
Oh my God. And when he yelled out that scream at the end of Won't Get Fooled Again, oh, that was a creepy Roger Whittaker scream.
Yeah, because it didn't sound like a really passionate scream. It sounded like a scream from someone who wasn't used to screaming or didn't know what a scream was.
didn't know what a scream was. Okay, sorry, Roger. We're kind of making... You know what? We're laughing with you, not at you.
Yeah, I mean, we're laughing at society.
That'll get us out of trouble. You know what? We're laughing at society.
It's society.
Now, well, there's a second thing I was going to talk about, and I still can't remember what it was.
Make something up.
No, I can't, because you can't just make something up, because then you have to actually think of something to make up. And it was actually, I thought it was, I was listening to the radio. There was something about listening to the radio.
There's a couple of those cover
songs.
That I songs.
Had to talk about something that was going on. I mentioned I listened to Lust for Life.
Lust for Life was the one, and then the other cover was the
Uncle John's Band. But in the middle of that, in between Lust for Life and Uncle John's Band, when I was picking you up, there was a song played. I'm going to look it up because you can look up the songs.
You can look up the songs.
From that radio station.
Now you'll
station.
Know what the song is. It'll jog your memory. The show will be back on track.
The show is really off track right now.
I mean, derailed just a little bit. We're picking up those cars and we're putting them back on the track and joining them up. And we're getting a new locomotive, new driver. An engineer. Driver.
Do you remember the Griffin Trio, by the way?
The Griffin Trio...
This is people, if you're just starting out on a podcast, This is how you kill time. It's ask a question that the person that you're doing the podcast with doesn't know. It kills time having him think about it. So what do you think of the Griffith Trio? Like, did they have a big effect on you when you were growing up?
Part eagle, part horse, part lion. Make up your mind. That's what I said to them.
The Griffin Trio? I thought they'd be the kind of band that they would ask you to join because they're, I think, very jazzy, but I'm guessing.
Open-minded? Because I'd be introducing some
things. In what way are they open-minded? Yeah, that's a very tough question to answer unless I get something to answer it by.
Well, if they're jazz, they got to do chemicals. They're probably open-minded like that. Let's see, lots of chicks. You can have lots of chicks in the backstage area with this band. Say yes.
Sure.
Okay, so I'm liking them already. What kind of instruments do they play?
Everybody's gone now. They're listening to the Garden Show. We can just say what we want. And okay. If you are still around, bless you. Because this is the show. This is like 180th show. And this is the one that has really fallen off the rails. And it's okay. Really my fault. It's really my fault.
We're allowed to have one every now and then. Maybe two, maybe three.
So I'm up. What's 1900 hours?
1900 is 7 o'clock.
Here it is. Okay, this is the song I heard. I heard Lust for Life by J.D. McPherson. I thought it was a very nice cover. And then, unfortunately, I like this song, but God... I mean, I love the song. So I know what I wanted to talk about.
Now, you know.
It came to me. It came to me because I looked at the playlist. Sweet Jane, of course, is a song that is a classic song written by Lou Reed for the Velvet Underground on their last album in 1970. Now, this is a little bit complicated. So let me just go through this for you people. So... the DJ who was on was talking about, before the song was played, that this is Lou Reed's favorite, was Lou Reed's favorite version of this song. Maybe even his favorite version of any of his songs was by the Cowboy Junkies. Sweet Jane. Now, I heard it and... what should I say? All the Cowboy Junkies did, because I'm a Lou Reed and Velvet Underground fanatic, is they just redid the original version of Sweet Jane that's on a live album that very few people have heard, and it got edited when they did the studio album, the one that got played on the radio, that was a truncated version that Lou Reed disowned. So all the Cowboy Junkies did was basically a copy of the Velvet Underground live version. So I was not impressed, and still I'm not impressed. The Cowboy Junkies is the only band that can literally put me to sleep. They are just like the greatest cure for insomnia I've ever come across. Cowboy Junkies, and they're Canadian, so it's even harder for me to say that. But I've never had a band that bored me as much. Even the Grateful Dead doesn't bore me as much as the Cowboy Junkies. Now, the thing that I wanted to say that was important... Oh, Puss in Boots.
Sorry. That wasn't the thing you wanted to say. That wasn't the thing I wanted. That was a side thought.
When I picked up Rob, the song that we did not get to hear because we came to here to do the show was Puss in Boots doing Jesus Etc., which I like as a title. Jesus Etc. Anyways, I'm getting way off... The whole show has just been going way off topic. And that's my fault, I admit. There is a song that I heard, actually a great album that I heard, and I'm going to... Everybody remembers Brewer and Shipley.
Yeah.
From, of course,
One Took Over the Line,
Jesus. Sweet Jesus, which was even covered, I think I mentioned this on the show. I know I mentioned this. Was even covered on the Lawrence Welk show because they didn't know what it meant. Oh, there's a clip of that. I hope it's on YouTube. I think I saw it on YouTube at the time. It was kind of making the rounds and people were talking about it. And it's just hilarious seeing the Lawrence Welk singer sing One Took Over the Line is one of the greatest moments
think,
ever.
You know, at least one of those Lawrence Welk singers was hip and knew what was going on there. No one said anything.
But I'm not surprised that none of them were.
No one said anything.
If you think I'm going to be surprised that, it says right here. It says right here as I'm looking up Brewer and Shipley. Now I lost it. Why did I lose it, Rob? Oh, it says One Took Over the Line was performed on the Lawrence Welk Show, a television program known for its conservative, very conservative, family-orientated format. I remember this, by a duo known as Gail and Dale.
Gail and Dale.
At the conclusion of the performance of the song, Welk remarked without a hint of irony, "There you've heard a modern spiritual by Gail and Dale." That's a classic moment. If you ever see that clip on YouTube, please, if you come across it, please watch it. It's totally one of the best moments on TV ever. Anyways, on the album before the album that they did with One Took Over the Line, which I just recently came across and listened to, and we can't review it because it's from 1969, unfortunately. It's an amazing album. And they do a song called Wichitaito. And the song, 1 year before Lou Reed released Sweet Jane for the Velvet Underground, has... the guitar part, one of the most legendary guitar riffs ever. Of course, the da, 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 da. And it has that in this song, and I was shocked. And then, I don't know if many people know that. I know it is on the internet this was written before Sweet Jane, and it has the Sweet Jane riff. But it's a killer song. It's a killer album. Brewer and Shipley made... Their early albums were really good. Their early albums, like their first three albums, Weeds is the album I'm talking about from 1969. There's a good title, eh? Weeds.
Weeds.
And it's got that song on it. They also do a cover of All Along the Watchtower. They are not technically just One Took Over the Line. They're a very kind of hip group. It's really after One Took Over the Line that they kind of decide to go a more commercial way and capitalize on that they kind of made weak albums. But their first albums, their first three albums, including the one with One Took Over the Line, is I highly recommend them. I don't think we can review any of them, unfortunately. We can review Tarkio, which is from 1970. That has One Took Over the Line in it. And then their albums kind of after that, they were trying to get all slick and, hey, look how slick I am. Hey, Rob.
It's time for us to grow up.
Yeah. And they kind of made three albums after that, and then they kind of broke up. Well, they didn't kind of broke up. They did in 1974. But they were actually, and to my surprise, up until this year, are not just a one-hit wonder and a couple of guys who got lucky with the song. Two very talented guys who made three very outstanding albums before they hit it big. Sometimes success can bring out the worst in you, which is commerciality, when you could have followed a path that was not as commercial, but a lot more on the edge.
Yeah, glittering prices and endless compromises.
Exactly. And I was going to talk about this a couple of months ago, but I had forgotten it because I didn't write it down. That reminded me when I drove over to talk about it. If you're on a streaming system like Spotify or whatever, I highly recommend you listen to the album Weeds by Brewer and Shipley or any of their first three albums, Down in LA, Weeds, or Tarkio. And that is Odds and Ends for today.
We're done? I was just getting into it.
Not the show. Odds and Ends.
Oh, okay. Well, let's keep the show going.
No.
Not now. That's it. Not now.
I'm tired. So today, yeah, I was going to do, I had a segment, but I knew that this would be long.
So we gotta cut that segment out.
So next week we'll do the segment.
Okay.
Yeah, because right now we're going to talk about Elliot Murphy. Now, a lot of people are going to say, who the fudge is Elliot Murphy? I know that Rob knows about Elliot Murphy.
He's a famous actor.
Anyways, Elliot Murphy was born in Rockville Center, New York, and grew up in Garden City, Long Island. I was going to say Rhode Island, but that'd be a mistake.
That'd be crazy.
Yes. And began playing the guitar at age 12. He was born in 1949. Now, he's had a very interesting life. Now, he may not be well known in North America, but just like our friend Jerry Lewis, he is immensely popular in France. In fact, he lived in Paris, I think from 1985, for about 40 years. 30 years at least, 10, 20, too many calculations in life, but about 30 years. And then in 2015, he moved back to America, but he still kept his place in Paris. So, and he's got many awards. And what I mean by awards is by the government of France, because they consider Elliot Murphy very much a cultural icon.
Artistic awards.
Artistic awards, yes. Like the, if I can bring that up here, because I can't say it, it's in French by memory. I have to.
You just actually give us the acronym.
The acronym. Fuck off. So, acronym in French. No, I can't. I'm sorry. I can't just bring it up like that. But like les lettres des arts, like stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I've got a few of those.
The Order des Arts et des Lettres.
I got one of those.
Yes, the in 2015 he got that. He was also awarded the Medaille de Famille de la Ville de Paris in a ceremony at the Hotel de Ville, presided by Paris Mayor Bertrand Delano, for recognition of his career as a musician and author. Oh, by the way, he's a novelist. He's a singer-songwriter, obviously. He's a journalist. He's a record producer. And yet, he's extremely well-known in North America. But the love that Europe has for him is amazing. I think that's why he moved there. I'm not sure. He's released about 40 albums.
I had to scroll quite the ways down on Spotify to get to his album.
Yeah. It's about 40 or 50 albums in the last 50 years. I think it's about 40 albums in 50 years, which is a huge amount for rock and roll. Because if it was a country artist, if you had a 50-year career, you'd probably have like 120 albums. Like Johnny Cash, because they release
recording once every 3 months.
Yeah, exactly. And you record a whole bunch of songs,
bunch
the
of
same 2 minute time.
Songs. Yeah,
yeah. And then you release them three albums a year, 28 minutes long albums. That's just the way it was. That's just how country music was made. In rock and roll, things are done a little bit slower and a little bit more artistically, if I may say that. Now, I have to admit, because he is good friends, very good friends with Bruce Springsteen, I have heard a lot about Elliot Murphy, and I've heard a lot about Aqua Show, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but I've never heard his music before. Like most North Americans, I really haven't heard his music. But don't do that. Don't look around like I'm talking boring talk, which I am.
I got to keep one eye on the screen there.
Oh, sorry. I have to get a drink of water. What happened to that screen?
Well, that screen, there was a red line on it. It was freaking me out, but it turns out that's just the red line to show the...
Fantastic. Word. So... Sorry, Rob. In 1973, Elliot Murphy released this album, which would be his first of 40 albums, called Aqua Show. Now, this is where we're going to start, because you know all about kind of like the background of Elliot Murphy. There's not a lot of background other than he releases a lot of stuff. Music, what did I say, books?
Books, you know, journal-y stuff.
Yeah, paintings. He just releases stuff. He doesn't have one of those lives where it's full of decadence or even anything. He just does stuff.
He's like a real Renaissance mook.
Yes, he is. Yes, he's a Renaissance guy. Yes, very much so. So when this album came out, Aquasho, it was universally praised. It really was. And it's well known as being, and even I remember this because this is the first time I heard it. Not heard the actual album, but heard about Elliot Murphy and Aquasho. And it's mentioned in almost every article that I've looked at when I did my research for this album, is that it was reviewed at the same time in Rolling Stone that Bruce Springsteen's The Wild, The Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle was reviewed. Now, people may think, so that was a big deal. You get the top review, the first review, and you give it as a dual review with these two guys that nobody's really heard of. And both albums, which it says here that it was reviewed by Paul Nelson, which is wrong, because I remember it was reviewed by Ken Emerson. I remember reading this review and being, I got to hear this album. This album by Elliot Murphy called Aquasho was called the best Dylan since 1968. That's a hell of a headline. Both artists, and that I think that's why both of their albums were reviewed at the same time in Rolling Stone. They came under the new Dylan tag, which is Certain Death. In fact, when Bruce Springsteen was called the new Dylan, and then he released his first album, Greetings from Asbury Park, New Jersey, many reviewers refused to review the album, and radio programmers refused to play it because they didn't want to seem like they were influenced by this new Dylan bullshit, which is totally unfair to the artist because the artist has no say whatsoever in how they're being promoted.
Hey, if you like Bob Dylan, try some of this.
Exactly. If you want to hear what Dylan should be doing, listen to this. Holy fuck. Is that a weight to be carried around? Holy smokes. And, you know, both of them just hated every person. We are doing very soon a new Dylan show with a theme of three artists who were called the new Dylan. And almost everybody has suffered in some way because of the new Dylan tag, because they expect Bob Dylan. And every artist may sound a little bit like Dylan, but they all have their own way of saying things.
Yeah, I've heard like sometimes you get a vocal inflection like Dylan, or maybe the way you put the song together. But
or you have a lot of words like Dylan or whatever.
I've never actually heard someone sound like Dylan.
No, neither have I. But people were so hungry for Dylan because between 1971 and 1974, he wasn't releasing much. You know, he really wasn't doing anything except dabbling here and there, but he wasn't touring or anything. So people were really, okay, what can we replace until Dylan comes back? And they found all these people, John Prine, Loudon Wainwright III, Elliot Murphy, Bruce Springsteen, all these people. And everybody would be called the new Dylan because we're not getting any Dylan, so this would be great.
I wonder how many new Elvises there were.
And there were very few new Elvises.
No new Elvises.
And there was no... It's funny that you brought that up. There's never been any, like, no new John Lennon, hardly. I can't remember, but I don't think so.
No new McCartney.
Roy Orbison. Only have I ever heard this with Bob Dylan, and I've heard it many times. And we're going to have a very fascinating theme on this.
That's reporters reporting on each other.
After the new year, which shows you, in a way, you could say that. It's like, oh, this is very Dylan-like, but still, each artist is their own artist, so... It's like seeing the new Jesus, because that's how much of a burden it is on the artist.
It's a lousy way to say that this has some qualities similar to that other person.
Exactly. You should say it has some, just like you said.
Yes.
This record has some qualities of Bob Dylan that
yep.
people who like Bob Dylan will find attractive. Not like he's the best Dylan since 68. fuck, it's not even Dylan. You know what I mean?
None of the new Dylans were Dylan.
They're not even Dylan. Yeah, exactly. None of them were, unless they changed their name, and they still wouldn't be the Bob Dylan.
They spelled it D-I-L-L-O-N.
Wow. Just, you know what? Nowadays, it's even more ludicrous than it was back then. And it was ludicrous back then. It's terrible because it really did, I wouldn't say ruin careers, but it affected almost everybody. And these two albums got reviewed, Aqua Show and The Wild, The Innocent Issues, at the same time. They were both called masterpieces, and they both failed. Which just goes to show you that hype doesn't mean too much, even when you got, like The Wild, The Innocent and Easy Shuffle. It's now considered, and we reviewed this album, it's a brilliant album, at least to me. Rob really liked it.
Yes.
But I just think it's an album I've actually played like hundreds of times, and I just think it's just mind-blowing. But it didn't sell anything when it was first released, and it would never have really sold anything if it wasn't for the Born to Run album. So it didn't matter how much hype. In fact, there was a thing like, I'm not buying it because I'm not buying your hype. And I could see that as a consumer too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if I buy this album, that means I'm buying what you corporate people are telling me.
Yeah, that's exactly sales talk, the new Dylan.
Yes, it's all sales talk. It is. It's all big wigs trying to make money off an artist. And there is a part of the listener and anybody that's involved that says, no, I don't want anything involved in your promotion. So, and you don't think about how unfair it is to the artist. You don't think about that when you're a consumer or radio programmer or whatever. You're just thinking, like, fuck you, CBS or Columbia. You know, like, don't try and force this on me.
If you like it, I probably shouldn't.
Right.
Grown up. Filthy grown up.
Man.
Grups.
Grups.
Well, Star Trek reference there.
Now we come to the album, and like I said, because of this review of Bruce Springsteen and Elliot Murphy, they became and have been for the last 50 years very good friends. So that is a nice thing. Every time that Bruce plays in Paris, Elliot Murphy would come on stage. Bruce would invite him, and vice versa when Elliot Murphy would come to America. So they have a friendship that a lot of people know about. But unfortunately, before we talk about the music on the album, I got a pet peeve that everybody knows. My pet peeve is I
hate those guys.
The marketing of record. I'm not saying we've already talked about what they said about the album. I'm talking about now what I think are the two most important things other than the music on the album, which is the cover and which is the title. Now, both, even to this last month, until I heard this record for the first time, even though it was always called a new Dylan record, I didn't trust that it was a new Dylan record because the cover looked like, to me, it's a terrible cover, for one thing, and which will dissuade you from, I'm telling you, an ugly cover will dissuade you from buying a record quicker than any bad song will. I'll tell you that right now. Rob knows that too. If you ever were
covers in the
70s or early 80s and were buying records, covers meant so much.
Covers can sell or they can fail to sell.
Yes, doesn't matter how good or bad the music is, covers can do wonders. Just ask Frank Zappa. How many kids bought his albums without even hearing his music because of his great covers. This album looks like it's a cheapy album from 1969, like a psychedelic album. And it also combines looking like it's a glam rock album from like 1973, the year.
Looking at it, I'm not picturing the same kind of music
that I was hearing.
I did not match those two up.
That's the problem. It doesn't look like a Dylan type of earthy music. It looks more like a combination prog rock, late 60s album combined with David Bowie type glam rock. That's just what it looks like. Plus, it's called Aqua Show, which sounds like a prog rock album. Or you could even say Aqua Show sounds like a glam rock or glitter rock album.
I didn't find the Aqua Show anywhere in the...
And there was no mention of Aqua Show. You're right. There is no mention of Aqua Show in the lyrics or anything. It was... Who knows? It was... Who knows? I'm not going to say why it was as a title. It's a terrible title for a first album. I know that. I'm sorry. These are things that I know from my 40 plus years of experience listening to records and being in the music industry. That's a terrible title. It's a terrible cover. It doesn't tell you what's inside the record at all. In fact, it deceives you into thinking it's something else. I always thought this had to be some kind of glitter prog rock record. And it's nothing like that. It's actually like Bruce Springsteen. And yet you would absolutely not know that by looking at the cover or looking at the title. Aqua Show just reeks of Yes to me. And we love Yes, but you have to know you're buying Yes.
Music.
Yes.
Exactly. You think you're getting one thing, you're getting another. Or if you're looking for this one thing and you see this cover, you're thinking, my thing I'm looking for is not in here.
Exactly. Yeah. And you return it. You just return it, and all of a sudden you lost the sale, and you're losing sales. That's why I think this album did not sell, and that's why I think, in all reality, his career stalled in North America. It can only take one album sometimes to kill a career in a certain country, and in North America, with Canada and the States, I really think that one mistake kind of doomed him in this country. Or in this continent.
Might have, but I think he had probably a tough struggle at the time because there's a lot of songwriters at that time. I don't think we have that many now.
Yeah, you know, we only mentioned three of these so-called New Dillons. There's literally like maybe 50 that if you looked it up, like we're not even talking about the James Taylors and all these people that singer-songwriters. There's a plethora of them in the early 70s. And the worst thing you want to do is to have an album that doesn't even show that you're a singer-songwriter, even though you are. And that's so you're doomed. And that's it's unfortunate because I think this album is excellent.
That might be hard rock. I mean, look at the guy's hair.
I know. You see, I thought there would be a David Bowie hard rock album too. Like a Ziggy Stardust, an Aladdin Sane, something like that. I had two things going on in my head. Yeah. And that's what an album and title does for you, Rob. You know that.
Yes. Bruce Springsteen looks like his music.
Yes, exactly. And his album cover and his title, Perfectly Street, which is what his lyrics are about, From the Street. These are two, but there's no way with this album cover that you think that this is a street type album.
Sure, that's taking place someplace in the another planet,
exactly.
The heavens.
Exactly, exactly. Weird, it mystical... might as well have been called Tales from Aqua Show because it has such a similar title to so many products, especially, of course, Tales from Topographic Oceans, but it just reeks of not being a singer-songwriter album, which it actually is.
Yeah.
And that's why Bruce Springsteen's album has flourished over the years, is because there's no bullshit. You know by his picture on the cover that this is a gritty guy with a beard who's singing gritty songs, and they're from the street, and it's called The Wild, the Innocent, and the East Street Shuffle. Brilliant. It didn't work at the time, but eventually it did. This was never going to work just because of that. And that's sad. But let's get to the music because I really love this album. It may not appeal. It will really only appeal, I think, to people who like words, people who like Dylan, to be honest with you, because Dylan has a lot of words. It appeal to a lot. You said the Renaissance man. It appeals to the thinking man's thinking man or woman type of listener who listens to stuff that's not just top 40. This is stuff makes you think. It's got a lot of words. It's got a lot of hidden.
Words are a lot smarter than you're used to. And
it's a smart album. Yes,
yeah. it's clever ways of saying things. He's definitely the poet.
Yeah, he's a poet. Yeah, and it's a very well put. He has a clever way of saying sometimes the mundane. And that is what he would, I would assume, eventually use as a writer for books. And you can see that he has a penchant for writing. This is an intellectual type of album. Not that it doesn't rock, because it rocks. It's actually the heart of this album is the music, which is excellent on this album. It's absolutely excellent. And there's a thing about the new Dylans, the ones that are more like Bruce Springsteen, that are more rock and roll than folk. There's a vitality because they use so many words and they try and get those words out. And there's an energy. And that happens with this album. There's an energy to the album. You're brought up because he's squeezing words in, and he's just like Bruce Springsteen did with Greetings, as we reviewed that album, Both Love, is that there's an energy when you try and get that music out and you only got 4 minutes and you got all this things going, and it ends, and then the next one starts, and it's full of energy because you got another song with a whole bunch of words that you're trying to get out.
That is. At times I was thinking, did he pack too many words in, like, too small of a space? I'm not sure, because I tried looking at the lyrics, thinking, you know, what would I have done if I had to put these to music? And it's hard. These lyrics, there's a lot in them. Like, you have to either
yes,
double the bars for the words, or to fit them in the way he did. It's tough.
Yeah, I have to admit, after what you said, which again is a good point,
I don't know if he did or not. Like, if it
I
is
don't
too
know.
Many.
I don't
but
know.
But
I'm telling you, the
things,
first
yeah.
time that I listened to it, of course, as we know, first time when we listen to the record, we don't use the words. We just listen to the record.
Yeah, you just...
And I thought, this way too many words. Then as I listened to it with the words for the second, third, and fourth time, I said, just like you did, I said, you know what? I can't think of any way else to put this that he's doing it. But again, just like you, at the end of the day, I still don't know whether he could have done some editing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because there is an energy to putting these words in there.
Yes, and I know in reading the lyrics, like after the first few listens, you know, he enunciates clearly enough that you can understand everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so much going by, it's better to have the words on page to, like, put them all together.
Right.
But...
And that's why this album, I hate to say it, doesn't translate well 50 years later, is because this is an early 70s type of record. This is a like what Bruce was doing in early 70s too, which was putting a whole bunch of words in there, which doesn't fly today, unfortunately. You know
today
what I mean?
It doesn't. Back then it did.
Back then it did. Yes, but yeah. But now I can't say, you know what, you should listen to Elliot Murphy because he'll knock you out.
No. The only ones doing that nowadays are our rap artists.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's why it's not, I think it is a almost lost classic, but I will find very few people nowadays that I can convince of that, because I don't think that nobody's doing that in rock and roll and has it for years and years. Like 30, 40 years, seriously,
yeah.
That to try and convince them that this is not wordy and is fun to listen to is a tough sell. So this album will never, I think, in our lifetime be considered at least a lost excellent album. Because I don't think it's a classic. It's close for me, but it's not, because there are a couple of missteps. But it's an album that I'm really jacked about. Like, I've just listened to it and I go, wow. It's just like a whirlwind. It's like a whirlwind. It is like words coming at you, and exciting words and exciting sentences and exciting music. But it's not for a 2023 audience. It's definitely made for 1973. But since they fucked up on it in 1973, it will maybe forever be in the dustbin of history, you know, unfortunately.
Or it may resurface 100 years from now.
Or it may resurface
during the next musical renaissance.
30 years from now. when we're like 42.
Yeah, because we age backward like Jonathan Winters on Mork and Mindy.
Benjamin Button. The only thing I want to point out is that I'm excited about almost all this record. There's a couple of missteps. I didn't like the Maryland. There's one direct song. Most of the songs are kind of abstract in a way. Maryland is a very straightforward song, and I didn't like Maryland's that whole thing. It just didn't resonate with me about Maryland died for our sins. That's not really true. Plus, same year that Elton John released Candle in the Wind, and Candle in the Wind compared to this is miles better than the Maryland song, because Candle in the Wind sounds like it's from a fan's point of view, from a common man's point of view. This sounds like a little bit too intellectual, like she died for our sins.
Yeah, there's one line in there where he's almost feeling bad, like as if he did something to contribute to it.
And yes.
Yeah, I feel no guilt over what other people go through. I don't affect it.
I agree. I think in this case, it's a total misstep and a total misrepresentation. Like you said, him being the voice of this song, as instead of the common man saying, "I miss Maryland," like Elton does, like Bernie Taupin does in his lyrics. This is more like, you people are to blame, along with me.
For killing.
No, first of all, I wasn't born yet. And second of all, you know, I didn't make her take pills or anything. We just loved her, at that time. And that's what Candle in the Wind said. This one is a little pretentious, and it doesn't work. And actually, you know, everything works for me on the first album. And then he has the White Middle Class Blues, which is kind of like, it sounds like White Middle Class Blues.
Those last three kind of
You know, the album kind of limps to an ending. And it gets kind of like worse.
Yeah, I was expecting a bigger finish than that.
You are, because you've heard an absolutely jaw-dropping first side. And then you get this first song on the second side, which is Poison Pen, which is another amazing song. And then it slowly kind of dissipates. Like, we've run out of ideas, or we have all our best ideas in the first six songs. Yeah. We're going to jam it with you guys with that.
I think those last three were the ones with the least words.
And they were, actually. Very good point. And Maryland, too, which I said was the only song that was really direct. The other songs had flights of fancy sometimes.
Yes, and the very metaphorical descriptions very of metaphorical. Things and...
And the reason imagery, Maryland didn't work was that it was too direct. It wasn't metaphorical.
Yeah, there was no imagery there at all.
But other than that, I give it a strong 4.5. Even though it kind of limped to an end, it's still like A Great Gatsby and Don't Walk Away are still so much better than things that are being done today. You know what I mean? Even if that's a lesser Elliot Murphy song. At the end, it's still better than so much more than that was being released, even at the time, for singer-songwriters. There's so much talent on this record. I would like to listen to, there was an album he made with his son, because he's like 74 now, of course. It's been 50 years since he released this record, called Aqua Show Revisited, where he redid this whole album. I can't remember the year. I could look it up here, but... it might take too much time. I think it was in the late 90s, early 2000s. I'd like to listen to that because I'd like to hear what this album sounds like updated. It's one of those albums. I don't really like to hear any album updated. This album I make an exception for. This would be interesting to hear in the present day tense.
Did he do things that he thought were mistakes and fix them?
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Did he edit some things? Did he change the music somehow because of the changing time? Anyways, it's just an interesting side note to this album. And it has, as you can notice, that it's Aqua Show Revisited that he did like 40 years later. It is his calling card, even though he's not well known here in Europe, especially in France. Aquashow is his thing, just like Ziggy Stardust. It's kind of like Bowie. And
oh yeah, that's how he gets it.
Yeah, and so not only do you get that, but you also got an album of Aquashow demos that he did when he was recording them. So you have kind of like three or four albums alone that are based on this one album. So this is a big album, at least to him in his career, and to Europe. May not be to us, because nobody really knows about Elliot Murphy, but just because we in North America don't know, it doesn't mean it's not good. We are not the forebearers of taste.
How do you know?
How do you know? How do you know? I mean, the French love Jerry Lewis, and me and Jerry Lewis do not get along well. Both I've, personally.
I've heard Jerry Lewis is a very funny guy.
Sure is. So anyways, what was your overall opinion here?
I got to get back to the point I was making about the lyrics before I lost my train of thought
talk
there.
Talk about what you want.
It was the amount of lyrics that was in there. And I remember when I was reading the lyrics along, like I did give them the first listen. And like I say, you could hear everything he was saying pretty clearly. So there was no trouble there. But then when I was reading the lyrics that had been written down, I don't know if they got them off the album or their original takes, but some of the lines in the songs were different. They were shortened from what the lyrics were on the page.
Wondering why that was.
But I noticed a few of them like that.
Well, why was that? Like, that's interesting, because usually they copy them from the songs.
I know, but the only times I usually see that happening is when they do that, but then they go in and record after handing in the lyrics. And as they're recording, they realize something's a little clunky.
Or
and making those
they took
final
the
directions.
Lyrics from the Aquashow Revisited, because that's the one they found, or for whatever reason, and he changed the lyrics on some of the songs.
Could be.
We don't know, but it's interesting because
I just
see that.
Typed in Elliot Murphy, the song, and then the lyrics, because right. I couldn't find these on my usual source.
It happens. We've done almost 200 albums. Very rarely have we come, if I don't know if we've ever come across that with where the lyrics didn't match up because they...
No, I've seen that on some albums before where you'll find a few words different and, you know, they hand in the...
Yeah, but a few words different because they might not understand it, but these were actually edited different lyrics.
I think what I'm talking about is the change for mechanical purposes. You're singing it at the time in the studio, you realize it sounds clunky. The lyrics are already in, but you change it in the studio and don't amend the lyrics.
Right, exactly.
That's what I'm used to seeing.
Could be very much...
So that's what I thought.
And that could be the lyrics that are on the album as far as the printed lyrics, because there were
the printed lyrics. Yes.
Because,
yeah, sometimes that's my thinking, is they hand in the lyrics and while they're still recording and we make those little changes.
But it was only, I think, two songs. So that was a good thing for us listening in that it wasn't all over the place.
Yeah. I found at least 3 points in the...
Three points? One, okay.
From what I was doing. But, yeah, that just gets back to the maybe there were too many words in the thing. I liked pretty much everything. They had all the good things that I like, but for some reason, I found his getting the words across was not as forceful as it could be. Not as it didn't intrigue me as much as it. The charisma.
Can I interrupt you for a second and help you?
When I read the lyrics, I really liked them.
Okay. I read this. This is not something I came up with, but I agree with it 100%. As I was doing the background for this album, somebody wrote, I don't know what the review of the album was, but it was a recent album, a recent review of the last 10 years or so. And the question was, this is a great album. It's a fantastic album. But why is it not, I'm losing my voice, but why is it not like Bruce Springsteen's Wild at the End of Sydney Street Shuffle? Why is it doesn't have that aura?
That master seems to have all the qualities.
Because of exactly what you said, and I agree with it. He doesn't have the magnetism, the force that Bruce Springsteen does when he rushes through the lyrics. He doesn't have the voice. And you're something either born with or you're not. You don't get a voice. You're born with a voice.
There's a speaking quality that compels you to listen. And some people don't have it.
Yes, exactly. You've hit it right on it. And Bruce Springsteen, when Bruce Springsteen sings on any of his albums, whether you hear it at home or you're driving on the radio and you go, oh, what is that? Elliot Smith comes on, he just doesn't have that magnetism of a voice. Like you said, magnetism is a huge word.
He does have a good voice, but it just is not conveying.
That's what I'm saying, no. He has a good voice. It's the magnetism. It's drawing you in. He doesn't have that Bruce Springsteen kind of rough street voice that these songs need. He has a really nice voice, but it's not kind of what he needs for
his voice has actually shifted closer to the Bob Dylan end of the spectrum. Where
so the question was, the question that you raised is why, if this hits all the buttons, does it not have that magnetism?
I have narrowed it down to his singing.
Yes.
And I got about six different points here that I was trying to
figure out
what it is.
I wanted to mention that, and I don't think I would have unless you brought it up, was that article. And I was thinking, you know what? He's kind of doomed from the beginning writing that music and not having the type of voice that brings it across. He has a good voice, but maybe for some other music. But for this type of Dylan Springsteen music, it doesn't grab you like a Springsteen does when he sings.
It doesn't get you the way those do.
That's the difference. And you hit it right on. You hit it. You got it. You noticed that it wasn't bringing you in.
Yeah, I wrote down, his voice is somehow not forceful enough, and then I tried to identify it. Is he speeding through the lyrics? Too much mental imagery too fast? Too nasal or breathy? Are all his songs the same character? And, you know, any one of those points, I've heard other artists do those things without it affecting the music.
And it's painful because it's not his fault. You're born with a voice, and that's...
No, he did the best album he could do, and it's damn good.
It's an excellent album, but the reason it's not a Wild and the Innocent is because he just doesn't have that voice, and that's not his problem.
Yeah, everything else was here.
Yeah, and he had the qualities. He had the musical and the lyrical qualities to be huge, but he had a voice that was different, was made for something else.
Yeah, it didn't transmit the music as well as it could have. And that's the only thing that kind of drives me away from a really good album.
But this is the type of album that I do the show for. To stumble upon... to be honest with you, this is an album I didn't stumble upon it, that I've wanted to do a couple of years before we even did the first show. I had this on the show. Unfortunately, it ended up number 180. But it was on my short list of 50 albums that we got to do. Because I've heard about this album for almost 50 years or 45 years at that point. I was going, we got to do this album at some point. And to stumble across this album as something I haven't heard yet, even though I've heard about it, is why we do this, is to be excited about, to be caught in the momentum of the greatness of this music that so few people have heard, unfortunately. But we get that chance because we decide to pick this album. And it could be a dud, and sometimes it is. But then there are sometimes you come across an excellent album that's been lost through time, and you go, this is why we listen to music, to get excited about. It doesn't matter if it's 1973 or 2023. Music stays the same. We change, but music stays the same. So listening to this, I'm like, wow, that's why we do this. To get excited about music that even at our age, we can get excited about stuff. We're always surprised.
All these damn new discoveries.
Always new discoveries. And it can be a new discovery from 1922. If you haven't heard it before, it's new to you, right? So to listen to this to me, it's like, wow, this, when I'm done with this record and it's over with after 10 songs, I'm like buzzed. I'm like, wow. That's like a whirlwind of words and great music, and it's just like, where was this album for me for 50 years?
I'm not. I was like lukewarm water.
Really? I mean, I wasn't.
I liked it, but I didn't have a whole lot of memory for the songs.
I'm that Dylan guy. I'm that Springsteen guy that drools over everything they do. I'm that guy that loves the words.
This is your type of music.
This is my type of music. This is the type of music that that just puts me over the moon. So that makes it a difference. But still, even for you to listen to this and say, this is a good album.
Yeah.
It's always worth a discovery because you never heard of Elliot Murphy before. I said this is the album we're going to do. So you're richer just by listening to it. Of something that, because of this show, we always may have wanted to listen to, but we never would have.
Yeah, and there's so much good music we haven't gotten to yet.
I know. It's funny and because we're coming up next year.
I only say that by extrapolation of what we've already discovered.
It's funny because by next January or whatever, February, we will have listened to 200 albums. That's like a drop in the bucket. It really is. And you don't even understand how much of a drop in a bucket it is until you do the show or you listen to it every week like you people do. And you go, you know what? There's like 2,000 records yet that there's to listen to that either we have listened to that we want to espouse about on the show or we have yet to come across. And that's just the 70s. Yeah. We could do this for the 60s, for the 50s. Even for the 80s, you know,
I'm going to let some other people do it for those decades.
I know. This is more exhausting. Taxing than I ever thought it would be because the 70s were so huge. They had so much going on. There was so much good music being released, so many kinds of music. I knew it was going to be difficult. I never knew it was going to be this difficult because it was a big cinerama scope type of picture, and I knew it was big. I didn't know it was IMAX.
I came into it thinking I could maybe slough off a few listens and fake my way through some shows, but you can't slough off any. You got to listen to them to come up with something.
That's the big thing, isn't it? Isn't it? Is that sometimes you think, you know what? I know this band pretty good, and even though I haven't heard this album, I think, you know what? We're doing an album next week, which is the same thing. You can't slough off because this band surprise you. They do things early in their career which they didn't do before.
And some of the stuff you thought you were familiar with, you've forgotten stuff about that. Yeah.
It's a constantly surprising decade because bands changed yearly.
Yeah.
And bands changed. And you don't see that a lot anymore. We don't have rock and roll anymore, but let's just talk about the 90s or the 80s where bands just didn't... They kind of stuck to a formula and they were being advised. This is before bands were being advised and telling you got to go here and you got to go here. The 70s was, I'm the artist. I'll decide what I'm going to do. That all changed by the start of the 80s. But for this decade, anything was possible. And some were unbelievable mistakes and some were unbelievable classics. And we have an opportunity, like I said, it's only been a drop in the bucket, but we have that opportunity to say, hey, this album you should listen to. It may not resonate to you in 2023, but at least try it because you don't hear music like this anymore. And that's the saddest thing that we say. We've said it a couple times on this show, maybe more than a couple times when we reviewed an album and say, you know what's the saddest part about this album is that it's great and you won't hear it again. Not this album, but that type of music. And that's so sad. No music should be obliterated. But this type of music is. You'll hear this music maybe in a club, but you'll never get a record contract for it anymore.
This music becomes grains of sand on a beach.
Yes.
It's there, but it's so small and far away that the...
So I gave it 4.5. I know you didn't give it 4.5.
No, I gave it 3.5. First listen didn't really grab me. Next few listens, musically, I got more into it. But it wasn't until I actually read the lyrics and
you know, and it doesn't surprise me. If I had to say...
I could hear the lyrics clearly.
I like that.
But I had to read them before I enjoyed them more. So...
I think that has to do with the literacy of it. I think it has to do with, because same thing with me. I could hear it very clearly, but it's like reading a novel or hearing it. It's nice, but when you actually read it, it kind of soaks in a little bit.
Yes, you have more a bigger picture, more of a framework to attach things to, and that sticks in your mind better.
I knew if... You know that I always play this game. How's Rob going to like this? What's he going to give it? I knew you were kind of going to give it 3.5 or 4 because this is this. I knew that this music was too good to for you not to like, but I also knew that this was not exactly up your alley. But this is my alley. This is the music that is central to everything I do. Springsteen and Dylan and Lou Reed. Those three guys are central to everything that I write and do. So giving it 4.5 is natural to me, but knowing you, even though our tastes are very similar, nobody's tastes are exactly similar. And I knew that you would like it, but I knew it wasn't going to drive you over the moon like it did for me.
You know, the other odd thing that I have to mention, I was listening musically, didn't hear a whole lot of electric guitar. It was acoustic guitars, bass. There were a few electric guitar solos, but they weren't real rippers. A
lot of
keyboard and organ and harmonica. Keyboard and organ,
very blonde on blonde, Bob Dylan.
Harmonica.
Yes, and harmonica. And a lot of words, which I know that we said that, but we're saying this in the context of the music now, in that there are a couple of great solos. Elliot Murphy plays guitar on this, and he has a couple of really good solos, but they're not like every song.
No.
And most of it is just words, but the music is alive and it's back there. It's just not front and center. And I would like, if I could give one advice to people, this is not like a spoken word album or anything like that. The music is very much as important as the, if not more important than the words, except there's not a heck of a lot of solos. It's just that the music, like when he stops singing, and then it's very, everything is very important. Just like a Bob Dylan record in the 60s. There may be a lot of words and no solos, but the breaths in between and what the band plays before the next stanza comes in, just like this record, is very important.
Yeah, I thought musically it was put together really well and played really well.
Yeah, so we both agree that we really like this record, just in degrees.
A little more on the sparse minimalist side, but...
It was, which is meant to be.
Yep.
Yeah, it's meant to be. I'm just still pissed off that it was marketed such, because I would never have guessed this album sounds like this.
No,
I never would have
guessed.
Not
looking at the, I'm thinking the 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus.
Exactly. Doesn't that immediately come into your head?
Yeah.
And it pisses me off.
That kind of early 70s psychedelia.
Yeah. And it's got this late 60s cover with this imagination of Aqua Show of early 70s psychedelia. And it's like, wow, how, and I'm not blaming this on Elliot Murphy at all. No. How can a record company be so fucking stupid? How can you ruin a career, at least in North America, because he's a very successful person, but how can you wreck a career in North America?
I mean, the fact that he was successful, quite successful elsewhere, that's a marketing thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. So, we both like the record, just in different degrees, but you know what? It's not even a record I can even recommend because it's not played anymore. So I'm just saying, try it. If you like it, that's great. If you don't, I understand. Okay? But it was invigorating for me. And I love discovering albums that invigorate and to show that, you know what? We haven't listened to everything.
I literally had not heard the name before. So. Yeah.
Which I knew. And I knew you were going, I said, you know what? I got to do this album because I've been putting it off. And I've been putting it off. And now's the time. I was going to do it under the new Dylan for next year, but I thought, you know what, it's 1973, and I don't see anything else that I really want to do, so let's put it in there.
I'm thinking, what kind of music can an Elliot make? His name might have a bit to do.
Elliot. Okay, that's our show for today. Again, we come in almost exactly at an hour 20. We never planned this. Next week, we have another artist who released their debut album 50 years ago, in 1973, and it is a very interesting album. Whether it is good interesting or bad interesting, you will have to listen to find out. I'm going to assume that it kind of blew our expectations out a little bit. We don't talk about the albums until we actually do the show.
Yeah, we don't even talk to each other.
No,
about the
we don't talk. That's what I mean. We don't talk to each other because we don't want to. But
I don't
want to
use anything off the show that I want to use on the show.
But so. I'm not going to say good or bad or indifferent. I'm just going to say that I'm pretty confident that both of us were surprised.
I'll just say this one. The music forced me to listen to the words.
Nice. So please listen next week because it's going to be a fascinating show. It's going to be 2 days for us. We got to do that show in two days. But for you, it's going to be next week. And please listen. It's going to be a very interesting show. I'm interested to hear what I'm going to say. And I'm interested to hear what Rob's going to say. Because we know this band very well. But what we thought we knew kind of goes out the window.
I only knew I'd purchased the Greatest Hits album. So I could have a few of their songs. And
they're kind of going, what the fuck are you talking about?
I actually really enjoyed the Greatest Hits album. So.
Right. Exactly. We will talk about that a lot more. About their past and the albums we have heard or the songs we have heard. And their debut album from 1973. If you can figure it out, you know, look under debut albums 1973 and see which one do you think it is.
My only hint, before there was New Wave.
There was New Wave. Good one, Rob. Okay, so.
Let's get the hell out of here.
We're going to get the hell out of here. We're tired. And we have to be back here in 2 days. So
back to the shack. No, not the shack, here.
The beautiful studio that needs warm air. So everybody, as usual, please take care and stay safe. I just write her off. You hear the crickets?
Need the guy with the big long cane.
Rip.